don't think for a second that I'm falling for this show of familial support," Mrs. Felch sniffed. "Waylay Witt is a juvenile delinquent, and her mother is a home-wrecking, pill-popping boil on the bottom of society." "Thought you said there's no need for language."
"Crap on a cracker,"
Amanda whispered, and I guessed she'd just spotted her granddaughter's hiding place. "Huh?" Lou was a little slower on the uptake until his wife pointed out the situation. "Oh, hell," he muttered under his breath. He stepped up to stand shoulder to shoulder with me. Amanda moved to his right. Together, we created a wall between Waylay and her shitty teacher. Naomi looked relieved, then turned back to face the Kraken. "Mrs. Felch," she snapped, bringing the woman's attention back to her. I snapped my fingers at Waylay and pointed to the door. She started to belly crawl her way toward the door. Naomi waved her arms and paced toward the opposite side of the classroom like she was throwing a fit. "I have empathy for your situation. I really do. You certainly didn't deserve what your husband and my sister did to you. However, you are responsible for not just teaching these students, but for making them feel safe in your classroom. And I have it on good authority that you are failing in spectacular fashion when it comes to that duty." Waylay's sneakers disappeared into the hallway. "Tina took my husband into her bed and..."
"Enough!"
I bit out the word and the woman's lip trembled.
"Yeah, what he said,"
Amanda agreed, backing toward the door.
"Oh, dear, I just remembered. I left my purse in the hallway."
She hustled out the door, holding her purse. Naomi returned to stand in front of me. "I'll give you the weekend to decide whether you're going to modify your behavior so that all your students, including my niece, feel safe in your classroom. If you refuse, then I'll not only have Waylay removed from your class, I'll go to the school board and I will raise hell." I reached an arm around her chest and pulled her back to my front. Naomi the Spitfire could be just a little terrifying when she wasn't screaming her frustrations into a pillow.
"She'll do it, too," Lou cut in proudly. "She won't stop until you're out of the classroom, and the rest of us will be there to back her up every step of the way."
"It wasn't supposed to be like this,"
Mrs. Felch whispered. She sank wearily into the desk chair.
"We were supposed to retire together. We were going to drive the RV cross-country. Now I can't even look at him. The only reason he stayed is because she dropped him as quick as she picked him up."
I guessed it couldn't be easy for Lou to hear this about one of his daughters, but the man hid it well. I felt Naomi's anger drain out of her.
"You didn't deserve what happened to you," Naomi said again, her voice softer now. "But neither does Waylay. And I'm not going to let anyone make her feel like she's responsible for the decisions adults make. You and Waylay both deserve better than the hands you were dealt."
Mrs. Felch flinched, then sagged back in her chair. I gave Naomi an approving squeeze.
"We'll leave you to your weekend," she said. "Feel free to email me your decision. Otherwise, I'll see you Monday morning."
Waylay Regina Witt. Apparently, Naomi wasn't done yelling when we returned to the parking lot where Amanda and Waylay stood next to my grandmother's car.
"Now, Naomi," Amanda began.
"Don't you now Naomi me, Mom. Someone under 5 feet with blue streaks in her hair had better start explaining why I came down to discuss a situation with her teacher only to find my niece hiding in the coat room with a jar of mice. You're supposed to be at Liza's with your grandparents." Waylay looked at the toes of her sneakers. They were the pink ones I'd bought her. She'd added a heart charm to the laces. There were two mice nestled on a cushion of dried grass in the jar at her feet.
"Mrs. Felch was being a pain in the..."
"Do not finish that sentence," Naomi said. "You're already in trouble." Waylay's face went mutinous.
I didn't do anything wrong. I showed up to school on the first day, and she was mean to me. Like, really mean. She yelled at me in front of everyone in the cafeteria when I spilled my chocolate milk. She took recess time away from everyone and said it was my fault for not respecting what belonged to other people. Then, when she was handing out papers about some dumb bake sale to take home to our parents, she said I didn't need one since my mom was too busy in the bedroom to find the kitchen.
Naomi looked like she was about to have an aneurysm. Get it together, I warned her, tucking her behind my back. I put my hand on Waylay's shoulder and squeezed. Look, kid, I think we all get that you're not used to having an adult around who has your back. But you need to get used to it. Naomi's not going anywhere. You've got your grandparents, too. And you've got me and Liza J and Nash. But you scared the shit out of all of us running off like that. She scuffed her foot on the asphalt.
Sorry,
she said sullenly. What I'm saying is you have a lot of people in your corner now. You don't need to go it alone, and your Aunt Naomi can do a hell of a lot more than leave some mice in a teacher's desk drawer.
I was also going to give her computer a virus, one of those annoying ones that adds extra letters and numbers when you're typing,
she said, her cheeks pink with indignation. I hid my grin by biting the inside of my cheek. Okay, that's pretty good. I admitted. But it's not a long-term solution. Your teacher is a problem that you can't solve on your own. You need to tell your aunt this shit so she can deal with it like she just did in there.
Mrs. Felch looked scared,
Waylay said, chancing a glance behind me at Naomi. Your aunt can be real scary when she stops taking her screaming into pillows.
Am I in trouble?
Waylay asked.
Yes,
Naomi said firmly, just as Amanda insisted,
Of course not, sweetheart. Mom!
What? Amanda asked, wide-eyed.
She's been through a traumatic few days at school, Naomi.
Your mother is right, Lou said. We should call an emergency appointment with the principal and the superintendent. Maybe they can convene a special school board meeting tonight.
This is so embarrassing,
Waylay groaned. I didn't know what the hell I was doing wading into a family disagreement, but I did anyway. Why don't we let Mrs. Felch stew for the weekend? Naomi already laid it out for her real clear. We'll deal with whatever needs dealt with Monday morning, I said.
Why are you even here? Lou demanded, turning his anger on me.
Dad!
It looked like it was Naomi's turn to be embarrassed as she stepped to my side. Waylay, go let the mice out over there on the tree line, I ordered. She shot me a wary look before scampering off toward the skinny strip of woods between the school and Knock-'em-out Pretzels. I waited until she was out of earshot before turning back to Lou. I'm here because Naomi was walking into a situation she didn't know anything about. Felch has had a hard-on for Tina ever since her husband banged Tina this summer. The whole town was talking about it. Now, once again, Naomi's cleaning up a mess that Tina left behind, something I get the feeling she spent her whole life doing. So maybe you can cut her some slack, or better yet, help her out with the cleanup this time around. Lou looked like he wanted to take a shot at me, but I saw my words had landed with Amanda. She put her hand on her husband's arm.
Knox is right, Lou. Us second-guessing Naomi isn't helping anyone.
Naomi took a breath and blew it out slowly. I ran my hand up her back, then down again.
I need to get back to work, she said. I've already missed an hour of my shift. Will you two please take Waylay home and try to keep her from running off again? Of course, sweetheart. And now that we know that she's sneaky, we'll keep a closer watch on her.
I'll take the front tire off her bike, Lou decided.
I need to skip ahead to the chapter on discipline in my library book, Naomi decided. Damn it! I hate reading out of chronological order. Judith's daughter changes the Wi-Fi password on her kids and doesn't change it back until they're ungrounded, Amanda suggested helpfully.
Waylay returned with a now empty jar, and I felt Naomi take another deep breath. Mrs. Felch is in way more trouble than you are, Waylay. But Knox is right. You have to come to me with this stuff. Don't tell me everything's fine when it's not fine. I'm here to help. You can't be sneaking out and exacting revenge on everyone who wrongs you, especially not with innocent little field mice. I brought food and I was going to put water in the drawer with them, Waylay explained. We'll talk about this in the morning, Naomi said. Your grandparents are going to take you home. It's up to them whether you have to scrub floors or if you still get to watch movies tonight.
It'll definitely be movies, Lou whispered.
But you have to do all the dinner dishes, Amanda added. I'm sorry for worrying you, Waylay said quietly. She lifted her eyes to look at Naomi. And I'm sorry for not telling you. Apology accepted, Naomi said. She swooped down and gave the girl a quick hug. Now I have to get back to work.
I'll drive you, I volunteered.
Thank you. I'll see everyone in the morning, she said wearily.
There was a chorus of goodbyes, and Naomi headed for the truck. I waited until she opened the passenger door, then interrupted Amanda, who was making plans to stop for ice cream on their way home. Can you two do me a favor and swing by Honky Tonk to pick up your Explorer? I'll drive Naomi home tonight. I had plans for her. 28. Third base. Knox.
She ran away from home,
Naomi said, staring out the window and clutching the bag of warm pretzels in her lap. She didn't run away, she snuck out, I argued.
Either way, how does that make me look as a guardian? I let an 11-year-old walk into town with a jar of mice and a computer virus.
Daze, you need to stop getting yourself so worked up over this custody thing. Do you really think any judge in their right mind is going to decide Way is better off with her mom? She turned flashing eyes on me.
How about when your life choices are under a microscope by the legal system, you can decide not to get worked up?
I shook my head and turned onto a trail barely wide enough for my truck.
This isn't work, she observed.
Not going back to work yet, I told her as we bumped along the rutted track.
I need to get back. I have a shift that I should have already been working, she insisted.
Baby, you need to stop obsessing about the things you should be doing and make some time for the shit you want to do.
I want to get back to work. I don't have time for you to murder me in the woods today.
The trees parted, and a field of tall grass opened up before us.
Knox, what are you doing?
I just watched you stand up to that bully who was trying to take her shit out on a kid, I began.
Some people don't know what to do with their pain,
Naomi said, looking out the window again.
So they take it out on whoever is nearby.
Yeah, well, I liked watching you in that excuse for a skirt standing up to a bully.
So you kidnapped me?
She asked.
Where are we?
I brought the truck to a stop along the tree line and shut off the engine. Third base. Least, that's what it was called when I was in high school. We used to sneak beers and hold bonfires out here. Half of my class lost their virginity in this field. A hint of a smile played on her lips.
Did you?
I slid my arm around the back of her seat. Nah, lost mine in Laura Byler's barn.
Knox Morgan, did you bring me out here to neck when I'm supposed to be at work?
She sounded adorably appalled. Oh, I plan on doing more than necking, I said, leaning over to release her seatbelt. Task accomplished, I plucked the pretzels off her lap and threw the bag into the back seat.
You can't be serious. I have work.
Baby, I don't joke about sex. Besides, you work for me.
Yeah, in your bar, which is full of PMSing women waiting for their pretzels.
I shook my head. Everyone in town knows it's a code red. It'll be a slow night.
I am really uncomfortable with the idea of an entire town tracking its women's menstrual cycles.
Hey, we're normalizing period shit, I argued.
Now, get your sexy ass over here. Good girl Naomi was warring with bad girl Naomi, but I could tell which one was going to win by the way she was biting her lip. Between that skirt and the way you stood up for Wei, I barely managed to keep my hands off you in front of Wei and your parents, and it almost killed me. We're lucky I got us here, driving with my dick so hard there's no blood left for my brain.
Are you saying you're turned on by me yelling at people?
Days, the sooner you stop talking, the sooner I can drag you across this console and make you forget all about work and shitty teachers. She stared at me through heavy lids for a beat.
Okay.
I didn't give her a chance to reconsider. I hooked her under the arms and pulled her into my lap so she was straddling my thighs, her denim skirt bunched high around her waist. Did I mention how much I love these skirts? I asked before crushing my mouth to hers. She pulled away from me.
Actually, you said you hated them, remember?
I gritted my teeth as she grinned evilly and ground down on my cock through my jeans. I lied.
This is very irresponsible of us, she said.
I yanked the neckline of her honky-tonk tank down, taking her bra with it so her bare tits were in my face. Her nipples were already begging for my mouth. If there had been an ounce of blood left in my brain, it headed south at that view. It's more irresponsible to make me watch you work your whole shift in that fucking skirt without getting you off first.
I know I should be offended when you talk like that, but
I leaned in and took one perky pink nipple between my lips. I didn't need her to finish the sentence. Through my jeans, I could already feel how wet she was for me. I knew what my words did to her, and it was nothing compared to what the rest of me was capable of. She shuddered against me once as I began to suck, and then her fingers were at my belt. I shifted my hips to give her better access, and the horn sounded. She gasped.
Oops, sorry. That was my butt. I mean, my butt hitting your horn, not like my butt.
I found myself grinning against her breast. The woman was entertaining on more than just the most obvious levels. Between the two of us, we managed to slide my jeans down to mid-thigh, freeing my throbbing cock, and only setting off the horn once more. I didn't want to wait. I needed to be inside her, and judging from the breathy little moans that were clawing their way out of her throat, Naomi was with me. I lifted her with an arm around her hips and used my other hand to guide the head of my dick right where I needed it to be, nestled against that tight, wet wonderland. My tight, wet wonderland. Naomi belonged to me, for now at least, and that was enough. With both hands at her hips, I yanked her down as I thrust up, sheathing myself inside her. She screamed my name, and I had to run through my emergency mental gymnastics to keep from coming right then and there. Her quivering pussy had every inch of my cock in a stranglehold. I held her there, impaled on me, as my mouth rediscovered her perfect breast. I swore I could feel the echo of each hard suck in the walls that held me captive. It felt like heaven. It felt, fuck, baby, I said, releasing her breast. Fuck. Condom. She let out a low moan.
Oh, Knox, if you move a muscle, I'm going to come. And if I come,
you're
going to
milk mine right out of me, I surmised. Her eyes were squeezed shut, lips parted, the picture of ecstasy in the late afternoon sun. I wasn't some teenage kid. I didn't forget protection. Hell, not only did I have a condom in my wallet like any responsible man, I also had a handful in my glove box. You ever? She shook her head before I could get the rest of the question out.
Never.
Me either. I ghosted my fingers over and around her breasts. She opened her eyes then and bit her lip.
This feels too good.
I don't want you doing anything you don't want to do, I warned. But I wanted this. I wanted to finish bare. I wanted to let loose inside her and feel our releases mix. I wanted to be the first man to go there, to plant my flag in her memory as the first of something memorable.
I'm on birth control,
she said tentatively. I let my tongue dart out to tease her other nipple.
I'm clean, I murmured. I can show you.
Naomi was a data kind of girl. If she wanted to peek at my medical record, I had no problem. Especially if it meant I got to move in her, feel her ride me until she came with nothing between us.
Okay,
she said again. It was better than winning the fucking lottery, that feeling that lit up my chest. The knowledge that she trusted me to take care of her. You sure? I pressed. Her eyes were open and locked on mine.
Knox, it feels too good. I don't want to play it safe. Not this time. I feel like being reckless and whatever. Just move, please.
I'd make it the best she ever had. I slid my hands behind and under her, cupping the curves of her ass. Testing us both, I held her up, pulling out just an inch. We both groaned, and her forehead met mine. Moving inside her with nothing between us felt better than good. It felt right. When she quivered around me, I had enough fucking rhapsodizing. It was time to take. You better hang on, baby, I warned. My heart was already pounding like I'd raced up a half dozen flights of stairs. I waited until she gripped the back of my seat. This is what's going to happen, Naomi. I'm going to start moving, and you're going to come as fast and as hard as you can. Then I'm going to take my time driving you up again, and when you go off that second time, I'll be right there with you.
Good plan. Very organized. Measurable goals, she said,
and then she was kissing the air right out of my lungs. I withdrew another inch or two and captured her moan with my mouth. Hold on, I reminded her, and then I was yanking her back down as I rammed my hips up. It took everything I had not to let go and drive into her again and again. Jesus, Naomi, I breathed as her pussy fluttered around my shaft.
I told you I'm close, she said, sounding annoyed and embarrassed.
Everything you do makes me want more, I growled.
Before she could react to my stupid-ass confession, I buried my face in her other breast and started to move, slowly, purposefully, even though it cost me. On my third thrust, she came like a lightning strike, setting off the horn like a victory cry. As the rest of her body tensed, her walls rippled around my dick in the sweetest kind of torture. I almost went cross-eyed trying to keep my release and my balls where it churned. I'd never had a woman like her, never felt anything like this before, and if I stopped long enough to think about it, I'd recognize that as a red flag. But in the moment, I didn't fucking care. I could ignore it as long as Naomi Witt was riding my cock. That's my girl, I groaned as she gripped and released me to a rhythm more beautiful than music.
Oh my God, oh my God,
she chanted until her body finally went limp on top of me. I went still inside her and gathered her close. I could feel her heart pounding against my own. Then she poked me in the shoulder.
You promised me another one, she said, the words muffled against my neck.
Baby, I'm trying to hang on here to deliver.
She lifted her head to peer at me through strands of chestnut and caramel. I brushed it back, tucking her hair behind her ears, the gesture feeling oddly intimate. And I wished I hadn't done it, because it felt like one more string knotting itself, tethering me to her.
So it feels this good to you, too? I mean, you're not just like, this is fine?
To illustrate her point, she added a half-hearted thrust with her hips, and I couldn't hold back the groan. Hell, Naomi, there's nothing fine about what it feels like to have you come on my cock. Why the hell do you think I said I'd do this fake boyfriend crap? She smirked.
Because you saw how disappointed my parents were in me, and you wanted to help me out like the grumpy small-town hero you are.
Smartass. I did it because I woke up, and you weren't next to me, and I wanted you there.
You did?
I wanted you there so I could flip you over on your hands and knees and fuck you so hard you wouldn't be able to sit down for the next 48 hours without thinking about me.
She opened her mouth, and something between a moan and a whimper came out. "I'm not done with you yet, Daisy," I said. Inwardly, I cringed at the harshness of this statement. Mid-sex me was not usually so fucking chatty. But Naomi was doubting what I'd made her feel, and that wouldn't stand, not even in the short term. "Can I move again?" she asked. Jesus, God, yes. And then she was riding me, working my cock like it was a stallion in need of breaking. Every slick slide, every little moan, every time a fingernail bit into my skin, I felt the rest of the world recede a bit more until it was just Naomi and me. Sweat beaded on our skin. Our breath mingled as we panted together. There was nothing like being fully seated inside her. Nothing like claiming her and being claimed. "Naomi," I gritted out her name as I felt her start to flutter around me again. Tiny little pulses that drove me out of my fucking mind.
"Knox, yes, please," she whimpered.
I took her nipple on a long, deep pull. It was too much for both of us. As the first wave of her orgasm took her, I lost control, pumping into her hot, tight channel as if my life depended on it. Maybe it did. Because when that first hot spurt wrenched its way free, when she screamed my name for the world to hear, when she closed around me and milked a second and a third burst from me, I felt born again, alive. Hollowed out and refilled to overflowing with something I didn't recognize. Something that scared the ever-living hell out of me. But I just kept on coming, and so did she, our releases endless. This was why once wasn't enough. This was why now I wasn't sure what was enough. 29. Knox's house. Knox.
"Nice place,"
Naomi observed as I locked my front door behind us and flipped on the lights. "Thanks. My grandfather built it," I said on a yawn. It had been a long day followed by a long night at honky-tonk and I needed sleep.
"Really?"
she asked, her gaze lifting to the loft above the living room, the timber ceiling, and the antler chandelier that hung there. The cabin was small and leaned toward rustic. Two bedrooms, one bath. The floors were pine. The stone fireplace needed a good scrubbing, but still did the job. The leather couch was finally broken in just the way I wanted it. It was home.
"Are these your parents?"
she asked, picking up a framed photo on one of the end tables. I didn't know why I bothered keeping it. My parents were line dancing at a picnic in Liza J. and Pop's yard, smiles on their faces, feet in sync, happier times that, in the moment, seemed like they'd go on forever. It was, of course, a lie. Happier times always came to an end. "Listen, Days, I'm beat. Between my brother getting shot, the sudden onslaught of orgasms and work, I needed a solid 8 hours of sleep before I'd be worth anything."
"Oh, yeah, sure,"
she said, carefully putting the photo back on the table, though I noticed she'd angled it toward the couch, not away from it like I'd done.
"I'll head home. Thanks for the backup today with Way's teacher and my parents, and then all the orgasms and stuff."
"Baby, you're not going home. I'm just telling you why I'm not making any moves when we go upstairs."
"I should just go home, Knox. I have to be up early to get Way at Liza's."
She looked as exhausted as I felt. I hadn't given it more than a passing thought in the past, but my girls at Honky Tonk dragged their asses home at 2 or 3 a.m. and on weekdays had to be up again by 6 or 7, depending on the usefulness of their significant others. I remembered a solid year stretch when Fee would fall asleep sitting up every day at her desk because her kids were shit sleepers. It got to the point where I had to do the thing I hated. I got involved. I'd unleashed Liza J. on her, and in less than a week, my grandmother had both kids on a schedule sleeping 10 hours a night. "You have off tomorrow, right?" I asked. She nodded, then yawned.
So we'll get up in... I glanced down at my watch, then swore. 3 hours and go have breakfast at Liza J's. It was the gentlemanly thing to do, which usually wasn't a huge concern to me. But I felt the tiniest splinter of guilt thinking about staying in bed while Naomi dragged herself off to family fucking breakfast and then tried to keep Waylay from breaking the law for the rest of the day. Besides, I could just come home after breakfast and sleep until whenever the fuck I wanted. I liked the way her eyes went soft and dreamy for a second. Then practical, people-pleasing Naomi was back.
You don't have to get up with me. You need sleep. I'll go home tonight, and maybe we can...
Her gaze slid down my body, and her cheeks turned a delicate shade of pink.
Catch up some other time, she finished.
Yeah, nice try. Want some water? I asked, towing her toward the kitchen. It was bigger than the cottages, but not by much. I could imagine some visitors would find it charming, with its hickory cabinets, countertops in a deep forest green, and a tiny island on wheels that I used to pile unopened mail on.
Water?
She repeated. Yeah, baby. Do you want a drink of water before we go to bed?
Knox, I'm confused. This is just sex. We both agreed. Unless my parents are around, and then it's a relationship. But my parents aren't here, and I'm so tired, I don't think even an orgasm could keep me awake. So what the hell are we doing?
I filled a glass from the sink and then took her by the hand and led the way toward the stairs. If you leave, I have to walk your ass home in the dark, then walk my ass back here, which puts me hitting the sack back by another 15 minutes at least, and days, I'm really fucking tired.
My stuff is at my house, she said, biting her lip in hesitation.
What stuff do you need in the next 3 hours, Daisy?
A toothbrush.
Got an extra upstairs.
My face wash and lotion.
Got water and soap, I said, tugging her up the stairs.
I still don't.
I stopped and faced her. Baby, I don't want to think about it or wonder what it all means. I just want to put my head on a pillow and know that you're safe and asleep. I promise you, we can nitpick this mess to death tomorrow, but right now I just need to close my eyes and not think about shit. She rolled her eyes.
Fine, but we're definitely nitpicking this mess to death tomorrow and reconfirming the ground rules.
Great, can't wait. Before she could change her mind, I pulled her the rest of the way up the stairs and into my bedroom.
Wow,
she yawned, blinking at my bed. A man's bed and his couch were the most important pieces of furniture in the house. I'd gone for a big-ass king-sized sleigh bed stained dark. It was unmade, as always. I never saw the point in making a bed if you were just going to have to unmake it to use it. It was a good thing Naomi was nearly dead on her feet, because if the rumpled sheets didn't send her packing, the short stack of underwear and t-shirts next to my nightstand would have. I nudged her in the direction of the bathroom and riffled under the sink until I came up with a spare toothbrush, still in its dusty, original package.
I take it you don't have many overnight guests?
She asked, wiping the dust off the plastic. I shrugged. I'd never spent the night with a woman in this house. I was already crossing the invisible boundaries of our agreement by having her spend the night. There was no fucking way I was going to hash out what it meant with her. She was the one who was used to sharing a life, a sink, a bed with someone. She was the one coming out of a relationship. Great. Now I was tired and annoyed. We stood shoulder to shoulder, brushing our teeth. For some reason, the companionable routine reminded me of my childhood. Every evening when we were kids, Nash and I hung out on our parents' bed, waiting for them to finish brushing their teeth, so they could read us the next chapter in whatever book we were in the middle of. I shook off the memory and glanced at Naomi. She had a faraway look in her eyes. What's wrong? I asked.
Everyone's talking about us,
she said, rinsing her toothbrush. Who's everyone?
The entire town. Everyone is saying we're dating.
I doubt that. Most of them are just saying we're fucking. She flung a hand towel at me that I caught one-handed.
Fine. My parents and Waylay's caseworker think we're in a relationship, and the rest of town thinks we're just having sex.
So? She looked exasperated.
So? It makes me look like a, well, like my sister. I've only known you 3 weeks. Don't you care what people think about you? What they say about you?
Why would I do that? They can whisper all they want behind my back. As long as none of them are dumb enough to say it to my face, I don't give a shit what they say. Naomi shook her head.
I wish I could be more like you.
What, a selfish asshole?
No, whatever the opposite of a people pleaser is.
A people displeaser? I supplied.
You have no idea how exhausting it is worrying about everyone else all the time, feeling responsible for them, wanting them to be happy and like you.
She was right. I had no idea what it was like. Then stop caring.
Of course you would say that, she said, sounding disgruntled.
She took the hand towel, wiped down her toothbrush, and then the counter.
You make it sound so easy.
It is that easy, I argued. Don't like something? Stop doing it.
The life philosophy of Knox Morgan, ladies and gentlemen, she said with an eye roll.
Bed, I ordered. It's too late for philosophy. She glanced down at her outfit. Her feet were bare, but she was still wearing that denim skirt and shirt from her shift.
I don't have any pajamas.
I take it that means you don't sleep naked. Just like making the bed, wearing pajamas was a waste, in my opinion. She stared at me. Of course you don't sleep naked.
There could be a fire in the middle of the night, she insisted, crossing her arms.
I don't have any turnout gear for you to sleep in.
Har har.
Fine. I left her in the bathroom and headed to my dresser where I found a clean t-shirt. Here, I said, returning to her. She looked down at it, then up at me again. I liked the way she looked. Sleepy, and a little less than perfect, as if the shift and the late night had worn down her armor.
Thanks, she said, staring at it, and then me again until I got the hint.
You do realize I've already seen you naked, right?
That's different. Go away.
Shaking my head, I left the bathroom, closing the door behind me. 2 minutes later, Naomi stood in the doorway in my t-shirt. She was tall, but the shirt still covered her to mid-thigh. Her face was scrubbed clean, and she'd pulled part of her hair up and back in a small knot on top of her head. The girl next door was about to crawl into my bed. I knew it was a mistake, but it was one I wanted to make, just this once. We traded places, with Naomi slipping into my bedroom and me commandeering the bathroom to remove my contacts from my bleary eyes. Running on fumes, I snapped off the bathroom light and crossed to my side of the bed. She was on her back, arms tucked under her head, staring up at the ceiling. I killed the bedside light and stripped in the dark, throwing my clothes in the direction of the dirty laundry pile. I dragged back the blankets and finally fell into bed with a sigh. I waited a beat, staring up at the darkness. This didn't have to mean anything. This didn't have to be another string, another knot. You good? I asked.
My pillow smells weird, she said, sounding disgruntled.
You're sleeping on Waylon's side. I pulled the pillow out from under her head, then threw mine at her.
Hey!
Better. I heard her sniff the pillow.
Better,
she agreed. Night, Naomi.
Good night, Knox.
I woke to a thud, a yelp, and a curse.
Naomi,
I rasped, ungluing my eyelids. She came into a soft focus at the foot of the bed, where she was performing some kind of gymnastics to get her skirt back on.
Sorry, she whispered. I need to shower before I go to Liza's for breakfast.
There's a shower here, I pointed out, rising on an elbow to watch her drag her shirt on inside out.
But I need fresh clothes and mascara, a hairdryer. Go back to sleep, Knox. There's no need for us both to be walking zombies.
Blearily, I glared at the time on my phone. 7:05 a.m. 4 hours didn't really count as spending the night with a woman, I decided. The appeal of being a bachelor was the fact that my days were dictated by me. I didn't have to work around anyone else's plans or not do what I wanted to do just so they could do what they wanted. But it seemed unfair even to me that Naomi should have to spend the day running on fumes while I slept in. Besides, breakfast did sound good. My feet hit the floor with a thump.
"What are you doing?"
she asked, trying to right her top. It was now right side out, but backwards. "No reason for you to walk home, shower, and walk back to Liza's. Not when there's a perfectly good shower here."
"I can't go to breakfast in my uniform," she said in exasperation. "Doing the walk of shame to family breakfast is not happening."
"Fine, give me a list." She looked as if I had just spoken to her in Swahili.
"A list of what?"
"What do you need to get through breakfast without shame? You shower, I'll get your stuff." She stared at me.
"You're working awfully hard for just a hookup."
I couldn't say why, but that statement pissed me off. Standing up, I picked up a pair of jeans off the floor. "Gimme a list." I dragged on the jeans. She put her hands on her hips and glared at me.
"Has anyone told you you're a grump in the mornings?"
"Yeah, every single person who's had the misfortune of seeing me before 10 a.m. Tell me what you want from your place, then get your cute ass in the shower." 4 minutes later, I was headed out the door with an obscenely long list for a Saturday morning breakfast that my grandmother would preside over in her camo pajamas. I jogged through my backyard to hers and came up on the cottage's back porch. The Haida key had been in the same place since I could remember, in a fake rock in one of the flower boxes on the railing. I snagged the key, fitted into the lock, and found the door was already unlocked. Great. Now I was going to have to lecture her on security. The cottage smelled like fresh air, baked goods, and lemons. The kitchen was sparkling clean except for the opened mail on the counter. Naomi kept it in a small upright organizer, probably alphabetized, but now all the envelopes were fanned out in a sloppy stack. The roll-top desk in the nook off the living room was open, revealing a mostly tidy workspace with Naomi's laptop, a cup of colorful pens, and a stack of notebooks. The bottom drawer was open a few inches. Though it was no mountain of underwear and t-shirts, I was glad to see a little disarray. I'd noticed the more stressed Naomi got, the cleaner she became. A little mess was a good sign. I took the stairs two at a time and swung into the bathroom first to collect the toiletries and hairdryer. Then I hit Naomi's room and grabbed shorts and, because I was a man, a lacy, girly blouse with buttons. Hall secured, I locked the back door and headed back to my place. When I walked into the bedroom, I found Naomi standing in the steamy bathroom with wet hair, wearing nothing but a towel. The view brought me to a sudden halt. I liked seeing her like this. Liked having an undressed, freshly showered Naomi in my space. I liked it so much that I went on the offensive. "You gotta lock your doors, Daisy. I know this isn't the big city, but shit still happens out here, like my brother getting shot." She blinked at me, then snatched the bag of girl stuff from my hands.
"I always lock the doors. I'm not an incompetent adult."
"Back door was unlocked," I reported. She dug through the bag and laid the toiletries out in a neat line around my sink. I'd brought extra since I didn't give a shit about the difference between eyeliner and eyebrow pencil.
"I lock the doors every time I leave and every night," she argued,
picking up the brush and running it through her damp hair. I leaned casually against the door frame and enjoyed the show as she methodically worked her way through her cosmetics. "What is all that shit anyway?"
"Haven't you ever watched a woman get ready?" she asked,
aiming a look of suspicion at me as she penciled an outline around her lips.
It's just breakfast, I pointed out.
But I don't want to look like I just rolled out of bed with you.
The stare she gave me was pointed. I glanced in the mirror and noted that my hair was standing up in all directions. My beard was flat on one side, and I had a pillow crease under my left eye.
Why not? I asked.
Because it's not polite.
I crossed my arms and grinned. Baby, you lost me. She turned her attention back to a palette of colors and started swiping some of them on her eyelids.
We're going to breakfast,
she said, as if that explained anything. With family, I added.
And I don't want to show up looking like I spent the last 24 hours having sex with you. Waylay needs a role model. Besides, my parents have enough to worry about without adding a second promiscuous daughter to their plates.
Naomi, having sex doesn't make you promiscuous, I said, torn between amusement and annoyance.
I know that, but every time I make a decision anywhere in the neighborhood of what Tina would do, I feel like it's my job to make it clear that I'm not her.
She put down the eyeshadow and picked up one of those eyelash curler things. I was starting to get a clearer picture of the woman I couldn't stop thinking about naked. You're a piece of work, you know that? She managed to give me a scowl despite the fact that she was using that contraption on one of her eyes.
Not everyone can strut through town not giving a shit about what other people think.
Let's get one thing straight, Daisy. I don't strut. She crossed her eyes at me in the mirror.
Fine, you sashay.
Why do you feel like you have to keep proving to your parents that you're not Tina? Anyone with eyes and ears who spends 30 seconds with you can tell that.
Parents have expectations for their kids. That's just the way it is. Some people want their kids to grow up to be doctors. Some people want their kids to grow up to be professional athletes. Some people just want to raise happy, healthy adults who contribute to their communities.
Okay, I said, waiting for her to finish.
My parents were in the latter group, but Tina didn't deliver. She never delivered. While I was bringing home A's and B's in school, she was bringing home D's. In high school, when I joined the field hockey team and started a tutoring program, Tina played hooky and got busted with pot in the baseball dugout after school.
Her choice, I pointed out.
But imagine what it was like seeing the parents you love so much get hurt over and over again. I had to be the good one. I didn't have a choice. I couldn't afford any kind of teen rebellion or bounce between majors finding myself in college, not when they'd already struck out with one daughter.
Is that why you decided to marry that Warner guy? I asked. Her face shuddered in the mirror.
Probably part of it, she said carefully. He was a good choice, on paper.
You can't spend your entire life trying to make everyone else happy, Naomi, I warned her.
Why not?
She looked genuinely baffled. Eventually, you're going to give a little too much, and you won't have enough left over for yourself.
You sound like Steph, she said.
Now who's being mean? I teased. Your parents don't want you to be perfect. They want you to be happy. Yet once again, you're jumping in and cleaning up your sister's mess. You stepped into the role of parent with no notice, no preparation.
There was no other option.
Just because one of the choices is shitty doesn't mean it's not an option. Did you even want kids? I asked. She met my gaze in the mirror.
Yeah, I did. A lot, actually. I thought it would be through more traditional means, and that I'd at least get to enjoy the baby-making end of things. But I've always wanted a family. Now I'm making a mess of everything and can't even fill out an application correctly. And what if I don't want this guardianship to be temporary? What if I want Waylay to stay with me permanently? What if she doesn't want to stay with me? Or what if a judge decides I'm not good enough for her?
She wielded a lip gloss at me.
This is what it's like living in my brain.
It's fucking exhausting.
It is. And the one time I do something that's purely selfish and just for me, it blows up in my face.
What did you do for you?
I asked. I had a one-night stand with a grumpy, tattooed barber.
30. Breakfast of Shame. Naomi. You don't have to come along, you know, I pointed out. You didn't get much sleep in the last 48 hours.
Neither did you,
Knox said, making a show of locking up the cabin before we left. I knew he was making a point. I didn't like people who made points, at least not before I'd had my coffee. We made the short walk to Liza's in silence. The birds were singing, the sun was shining, and my mind was spinning like a dryer with a lopsided load. We'd slept together. As in, fell asleep in the same bed without having sex together. Not only that, but I'd woken up with Knox Viking Morgan spooning me. I didn't know much about no strings. Hell, I had so many strings attached to so many things, I'd been tied up in knots for most of my adult life. But even I knew that sharing a bed and cuddling was way too intimate for what we'd both agreed to. I mean, don't get me wrong, waking up with Knox's hard, and I do mean hard, body at my back, his arm draped heavily over my waist, was one of the best ways in the world to wake up. But it wasn't part of the agreement. There was a reason for rules. Rules would keep me from falling for the grumpy, cuddly Viking. I chewed on my lower lip. Men got tired and didn't want to walk women home or let women walk home alone only to be eaten by wildlife. The man had gone through a traumatic 24 hours. He probably wasn't making the most rational decisions, I decided. Maybe Knox was just a restless sleeper. Maybe he spooned his dog in bed every night. Of course, that didn't explain why he'd volunteered to run next door and grab a bunch of my stuff while I showered. Why he'd put actual thought into an outfit for me. I glanced down at the high-waisted green and white shorts, the cute lacy top. He'd even grabbed underwear for me. Sure, it was a thong and didn't match my bra, but still.
About done thinking everything to death?
I shook myself from my reverie to find Knox shooting me one of those almost smiles. I was just running through my to-do list, I fibbed haughtily.
Sure you were. Can we go in now?
I realized we were standing in front of Liza's house. The smell of Steph's world-famous maple bacon wafted through the screen door. There was a single woof, followed by a chorus of barks as four dogs barreled through the door and off the porch. Waylon was last, ears flapping behind him, tongue lolling obscenely from his mouth.
Hey, bud,
Knox said, dropping to his knees to greet his dog and the other three as they jumped and yapped their enthusiasm. I bent down and exchanged more dignified greetings with the pack before straightening. Okay, so what's the plan? I asked him. Knox gave Wayland's ears a last ruffle.
What plan?
Breakfast? With my family? I prodded.
Well, Daze, I don't know about you, but my plan is to guzzle half a pot of coffee, chow down on some bacon, and then go back to bed for another 4 or 5 hours.
I mean, are we still, you know, pretending? Something passed over his face that I couldn't read.
Yeah, we're still pretending,
he said finally. I didn't know if I was relieved or not. Inside, we found Liza and my dad standing sentry behind Steph as he peered into the oven at two baking sheets of bacon that smelled like heaven. Mom was setting the table in the sunroom. Waylay was making her way around the table, still in her new pink tie-dye pajamas, carefully pouring glasses of orange juice. I felt a swift rush of affection for her, and then remembered I had to come up with a suitable punishment for her today. I really needed to get to the discipline chapter in my library book.
Morning, lovebirds. Didn't expect to see you here, Knox, Liza said, spotting us as she shuffled over to the coffee maker in a blue fuzzy robe over lightweight camouflage pajamas.
Knox draped an arm around my shoulders.
Morning, he returned. I couldn't pass up the bacon. No one can,
Steph said, pulling the trays out of the oven and setting them on the two cooling racks I'd discovered hidden behind the hutch in Liza's dining room. Waylay padded in on bare feet and sniffed with suspicion.
Why does it smell weird?
First of all, gorgeous, you smell weird, Steph said, giving her a wink. Secondly, that's the caramelized maple syrup.
Waylay perked up. I like syrup.
Her eyes slid to me.
Morning, Aunt Naomi.
I ran my hand through her messy blonde hair.
Morning, kiddo. Did you have fun with your grandparents last night, or did they make you scrub the floors?
Me and Grandma and Uncle Steph watched The Princess Bride. Grandpa fell asleep before the shrieking eels, she said. Am I still grounded?
Mom opened her mouth, looked at me, then shut it again.
You are, I decided. For the weekend. Can we still go to the library?
I was new at this discipline thing, but I figured the library was safe enough.
Sure, I yawned.
Someone needs her coffee, Mom sang. Late night.
She looked pointedly at Knox and then winked at me.
You know where else you two should go today, Dad said.
Now that the bacon was safely out of the oven, he was peering over Liza's shoulder as she flipped an omelet.
Where? I asked warily.
He turned to look at me.
Car shopping. You need a car.
Dad said it with authority, as if the idea of getting a car had somehow never occurred to me.
I know, Dad. It's on the list.
It was on a literal list. A spreadsheet, actually, comparing makes and models ranked by reliability, gas mileage, and cost.
You and Waylay need something reliable, he continued. You can't get around on bikes forever. It'll be winter before you know it.
I know, Dad.
If you need money, your mother and I can help out.
Your father's right, dear, Mom said, handing Knox a cup of coffee and the second to me.
She was wearing plaid pajama shorts and a matching button-down top.
I don't need any money. I have money, I insisted.
We'll go this afternoon, Dad decided.
I shook my head. That's not necessary. I hadn't finished my spreadsheet yet, and I was not walking on a car lot without knowing exactly what I wanted and what it was worth.
We've already got plans to look at cars today, Knox announced.
Krabby Viking says what?
Car shopping plans were news to me, and unlike having a boyfriend, the purchase of a car wasn't nearly as easy to fake for my parents.
He drew me into his side. It was a possessive move that both confused me and turned me on.
Figured I'd take Naomi and Waylay to look for a ride, he said.
Dad harrumphed.
I get to come too?
Waylay asked, climbing up on her knees on the bar stool.
Well, since it's our car, you have to help me decide, I told her.
Let's get a motorcycle.
No,
my mother and I answered together.
Well, I'm getting one as soon as I'm old enough.
I closed my eyes, trying to ward off all the catastrophes that rolled through my mind like a high school driver's ed film strip.
I've changed my mind. You're grounded until you're 35.
I don't think you can legally do that, Waylay said.
Sorry, Witty, I'm with the kid on this one,
Steph said, leaning on his elbows next to her at the island. He broke a piece of bacon in half and handed one piece to my niece.
Gotta vote with Way,
Knox said, squeezing my shoulder, one of those sort of smiles dancing at the corners of his lips.
You can only ground her until she's 18.
Waylay punched a fist into the air victoriously and took a bite of bacon.
Fine, you're grounded until you're 18, and no fair ganging up on me, I complained.
Uncle Steph,
Waylay said, her eyes going wide and solemn.
This is the best bacon I've ever had in my life.
I told you, Steph said triumphantly.
He slapped a hand onto the counter. The dogs, mistaking the noise for a knock, raced to the front door in a fit of barking.
Got some news, Liza announced. Nash is coming home.
That's awfully soon, isn't it? I asked. The man had two bullet holes in him. It seemed like that deserved more than a few days in the hospital.
He's going stir crazy cooped up in there. He'll do better at home, Liza predicted. Knox nodded in agreement.
Well, that means his place will need a good cleaning. Can't have germs getting in bullet wounds now, can we?
Mom said, as if she knew people who got shot every day.
Probably needs some food, too, Dad chimed in. Bet everything in his fridge is rotten. I'll start a list.
Liza and Knox exchanged confounded looks. I grinned. It's the wit way, I explained. It's best to just go with it.
I slept with Knox twice in the last 48 hours, and then I slept with him last night. And I don't know how much of it's a mistake. And it was just supposed to be one time and definitely no sleeping, but he keeps changing the rules on me, I blurted out to Steph.
We were on Liza's front porch, waiting for Waylay to get her stuff so we could go back to the cottage and get ready for premature car shopping. It was the first time I'd gotten him alone since the sex and subsequent arrival of my parents. We'd been trading texts for the last 2 days.
You did it again? I knew it. I freaking knew it, he said, dancing from foot to foot.
Great. Congratulations, Mr. Know-It-All. Now tell me what it all means.
How the hell should I know what it means? I'm the one who chickened out on asking that fine AF salon god for his phone number.
My jaw dropped. Excuse me, but Stefan Lau has never chickened out on a hot guy before.
Let's not make this about me and my temporary mental break. Go back to the sex part. Was it good?
Phenomenal. Best sex ever. Now I've trapped him in something resembling a relationship, and I have no idea what to say to Wei about it. I don't want her thinking that it's okay to jump from relationship to relationship, or that it's not okay to be alone, or that it's okay to have a one-night stand with a hot guy.
Hate to break it to you, little Miss Uptight, but all of those things actually are...